Death as an Old Friend by To Kill a Mockingbird. Rating explicit. Summary. Harry Potter cannot lose anyone else. Draco can't breathe. It makes him feel insignificant again. As small and alone as he had felt during 6 years. Terrified and out of his mind. He backs up against the counter. The tales of Beedle the Bard clutched tightly to his chest. The new edition allows the characters to rise from the page. Tethered to parchment by light and magic. Flourish and blots have been sold out for weeks. Now Draco feels foolish and stupid and small. He's not physically imposing. Never has been. But he remembers when that wouldn't have been enough to stop him. The very books are rattling on the shelves, likely charmed to respond to the bookkeeper's emotions. Clegg's is a new store, tucked behind Madame Pimpernel's. Draco had waved the smell of toad water elixir and a gripper to get to the shop. Now he regrets it tremendously. It's the yelling that he can't stand. No one has bothered him in years, at least not to his face, and especially not when he's got the little ones with him. Now, it takes everything Draco has to remain standing. The instinct to cower burnt into him long ago at the manor.
We should have killed you all, no matter wasting the guns on keeping the lot of you alive at Azkaban.
And another voice. 5 years gone, loud and echoing and pervasive.
Where would you be without me?
Draco shuts his eyes and thinks of Lenny, her bright smile and perpetually gummy hands. Hermione operates before she makes the conscious decision to do so. She's sure she looks a mess, a quill stuck haphazardly in her hair from where she's taking notes and organising files at the same time. She recognises that she's at Diagon, but Draco's Patronus nudges her ankle. The small fox somehow haughty, even though he came to her for aid. Hermione wants to laugh, but she can count on one hand the number of times that Draco has needed her seriously enough to cast a Patronus charm. The first time was directly after the war, during the untethered 8th year. Hermione remembers Draco's eyes, big and round in his pale face. They were the height, she and Draco, a fact which is lamented since 5th year. He'd seen swallowed up that day in Hogsmeade, caught between 2 7th years, his one trembling sea jerked between the two of them, back and forth, back and forth. The fox nudges her again, more anxiously.
Go on then, take me to him, she murmurs,
tugging her robes close from where they've blown open in the breeze. The fox needs no further encouragement, trotting past second-hand brooms and that dreadful cosmetic potion shop Hermione avoids in earnest. Hermione surprises he an unfamiliar shopfront, Clegg's, it looks like, and is apparent that it sells children's books almost exclusively. The colours are garish, but likely meant to appeal to someone far younger than Hermione's 22 years. The fox passes through the closed door, and Hermione knocks it open with her shoulder. She can hear the shouting before she's even got a foot past the threshold, and she can see Draco, pressed against the counter, a book clutched tightly against his chest. He's grown his hair out since the end of the war, and Hermione knows that if he were to untie it, it would fall to the middle of his back, just like Lucius had worn in years past. Now, strands of his white blonde hair stuck to his forehead, and his eyes look vacant and dull.
Expelliarmus!
Hermione yells, and the bookkeeper's wand sails into her outstretched palm. This startles the man into silence, but he looks ready to begin his tirade once more. But his mouth clacks shut when he sees who has interrupted.
Miss Granger, the man says, wringing his hands together. Is there anything I can help you with?
Do you know who this is?
Hermione says mildly, her eyes darting to where Draco hasn't moved a muscle, despite his Patronus nuzzling his leg plaintively.
You must not read the news, Hermione continues,
speaking of the man's stuttered attempt at a response.
You've really created quite a bit of trouble for yourself, she says. I do hope you'll survive it.
The bookkeeper looks more angry than confused now, but Hermione casts a careless stupefy in his direction and turns to face Draco. His eyes are far away, his fingertips bone white where they're pressing Beedle the Bard against his sternum.
Draco, she says softly,
running her fingers across his face and chest, checking for any wounds.
Why didn't you call for Harry?
Draco's eyes shiver to focus at the name, and Hermione can sigh with relief.
You know this man would not have survived the hour if my husband were to have come, Granger,
Draco says, his voice sharp but lacking its usual energy. Hermione wants to say something, comment on the now unfamiliar use of her surname, or defend Harry's honour. But her protestations die in her tongue, and she wordlessly holds out her arm in a silent offer to side along Draco back to his house. The entire house shudders when Harry arrives. Draco rolls his eyes
and focuses on dropping precisely 3 1/3 drops of Boonzang into a cauldron that will bubble over and burn him to a crisp if he doesn't keep a strict eye on it. He's meant to have this batch delivered to the Department of Distillate Warfare by Tuesday. If he's lucky, he can send it with Harry on his way into work.
Draco.
Draco hums himself a bit louder, meticulously powdering bicorn horn while he waits for Harry to apparate into his lab, instead of taking the stairs like a patient and competent adult would. Draco suppresses a shudder at the sharp crack that signifies Harry's entrance.
Draco.
Draco continues to ignore him, wiping the back of his forearm against his forehead.
Where are the kids?
Harry asks at length, when Draco doesn't seem inclined to speak to him.
With Ron and Hermione. Scorpius is likely destroying it under the wing of the Burrow as we speak,
Draco adds dryly.
Hermione owed me, Harry says carefully.
The caution is as much for Draco's sake as Harry's own. Draco doesn't have to see Harry's face to hear how tightly he's controlling himself.
Ah, to the heart of the matter, finally,
Draco says. He shifts onto tiptoes in an effort to grab a glass jar full of beetle eyes. Harry presses up close behind him, either impervious to or ignoring the bubbling cauldron situation just in front of Draco's meticulously organized ingredient shells. Harry plucks it down for him, his greater height serving Draco, as it has done for several years now.
Talk to me, sweetheart, please,
Harry says, his breath ghosting across the crown of Draco's head.
What is there to talk about, Potter?
Draco says, almost slinging one too many eyes into the pot.
I had a mishap on Dagon. Hermione came to help. No harm, no foul.
Harry spins him around so quickly that Draco yelps in fear for his potion.
A mishap, Harry says dully,
that damn scar slicing through his brow to settle just above the lash line of his left eye. Draco nods, settling his hands on Harry's forearms placatingly.
Bookkeeper at the new shop behind Pimpernel's. I tell you, Harry, the smell that shop emits is unfit for humans. Just last week, Scorp sicked up.
Harry shakes him, just a little, his mouth still in that tight, compressed frown.
He hurt you. Hermione said you looked like...
Harry lets his voice trail off before clearing his throat.
Why didn't you call me?
Draco bites down his lower lip. Harry's arm so tight around his waist that he thinks he might suffocate.
There was nothing you could have done. You were in the field today, regardless. Granger's working on that big thesis for the ministry and it was just... easier. It's fine. I'm fine, see?
The bottles and cans on Draco's shelves begin rattling ominously. Draco closes his eyes. Harry's got almost perfect control of his wandless magic these days. Except when it concerns Draco or the kids.
What did he say?
Draco sighs, trying to disentangle himself unsuccessfully.
He tried to crease hear me as soon as I walked in.
Harry's body stiffens.
Harry, it was fine. I already had a shield charm around me just in case. You know how new places can be. It bounced off. My charms are quite strong, thanks so much.
I'll kill him, Harry says flatly,
removing one hand from Draco's waist to twirl his wand idly between two fingers.
Harry,
Draco says helplessly, but he can't help the hot flush that runs through his body at the calm proclamation.
Don't ask me to stop. You know I can't,
Harry says tightly, and he absolutely casts a stasis charm over Draco's workplace, his wand motionless by his side.
Drives me bloody mad, Harry says,
tugging Draco at his chest.
Worrying about you all day.
Draco breathes in the scent of Harry. The sweat of the day mixed with the various medicinal potions Draco forces him down before he leaves the house.
I don't ask for much, Harry says,
pressing his forehead to the top of Draco's head.
I've given them everything. But you, and the kids, that's mine.
You can't catch everyone who hates me, Harry,
Draco says softly, reaching up and running a hand across the thick beard that Harry frequently forgets to trim. Draco spends a lot of his time shaving Harry surreptitiously, either with magic or by hand.
You'll be chasing people for a long, long time.
I'm the saviour, am I not?
Harry teases.
I can do whatever I like.
Draco can't help but stand on tiptoe to press a kiss to Harry's mouth. Draco hasn't called him St. Potter in years. Harry never thought he could miss it. The snide way that Draco's face would twist when he said it. Then he used to say it lovingly, his eyes big and frightened. Draco's still scared. He works all day, watches the kids when Harry's schedule takes him across international waters. And still he trembles in Harry's arms at night, whimpers caught in his pale throat.
Harry doesn't think Draco has even realised it, which is somehow worse. Draco holds his emotions close to his chest. Harry's never been able to manage his own so well. But Harry watches him tonight. Lenny hitched high on his hip, Scorp hanging off his hand while rattling off the most meandering story Harry has ever tuned out. Draco nods at all the right points, dryly pointing out inconsistencies in a way that makes Scorp rear up in familiar indignation.
Daddy, I did fly for hours and hours,
Scorpius says, whirling his little platform head around to address Harry. Harry leans against the breakfast island and crosses his arms. No matter, Scorp. Do you fancy a ride before bed? Scorpius grins, freshly 5 years old with Draco's colouring and Harry's curls. It makes something in Harry's chest tighten, and Draco can see it, glancing at him briefly while holding her finger dipped in honey to Lenny's mouth. Draco looks away, and his head tips to the side, his gaze far off. Lenny gums on her papa's thumb, green eyes focus on the sticky treat. Draco's name gets stuck in Harry's throat. The walls at Clegg's are paltry at best. Harry had brought Draco to sleep that night, soft sobs shaking his slender body. Harry hates to think of him as delicate, but in the privacy of his mind, that's just what he is. He's like a blade, terribly thin and sharp. Draco still has nightmares. Harry isn't even sure if Draco's told him everything, but he's certainly told Harry enough. It breaks Harry's heart to hear him crying so softly. A muffliato car so they can hear the kids through the charm network he's created himself. Lenny's mobile acts as a two-way mirror, and Harry's constantly checking on how she's doing in her crib through the eyes of the charm-stuffed stag hanging maliciously above her sleeping body.
Don't want to wake them,
Draco huffs, his small body tucked into the brawn Harry developed during our training. Harry rewarded the house as he left that evening, casting every protection spell he'd ever made Hermione teach him. Nothing can get in or out. He apparates directly to the entrance, having plucked the shop out of Hermione's mind's eye. The lights are still on at this time of night, and Harry assumes the bookkeeper's balancing his ledgers, or else completely unaware of the terrible mistake he's made. Harry tucks his wand in his robes. Incorporeus, Harry murmurs, stepping directly through the door. The bookkeeper stands with a start. He's cleaning the floor in front of the till, his wand pointed at a rag that scrubs and re-scrubs that specific spot. His face goes through a gamut of confusion. He looks first incensed, then shocked, and finally he lands on pleasure.
Harry Sodding Potter, in my shop, he says reverently.
Harry doesn't say anything, mentally waving away the security wards, and the aura charm in shops keep to alert the offers of danger.
Do you love anyone, mister?
Harry trails off, his arms fixed behind his back. He's wearing his darkest robes, the one Draco commissioned for him when they first got together. He remembers Draco's tiny pointed chin, looking at his wardrobe with disgust.
You've got pure blood coffers at Gringotts, same as me, Potter. Why do your robes belong in the gutter?
Hornicle, the man says, breathless. And yes, of course, I do,
he adds, belatedly remembering Harry's question. Harry hums, taking a few easy steps forward. There are all sorts of wizarding fairy tales in the shop. Arlok the Unicorn Tamer, Belle's Journey to the Land Beyond the Sea, and other stories. Tucked on a front shelf and out of place is a glossy edition of Beedle the Bard. Harry opens it idly, watching the charmed characters rise on the page and act out the plot. He's used to seeing 2D illustrations moving, but this is intricate and well-made spell work. He remembers flowing Draco this morning. He'd been in a rush.
I'm going to Flourish and Blots for that new copy, Harry. It's all sold out, and I don't want Scorp to have to share.
Harry had guffawed.
Sharing Bill's character, sweetheart, he'd said.
And Draco paused in looking for his socks to level him with a look that would dry water.
Sharing is common. We have the money. I'll tear Diagon apart if I must, if only to stop his infernal begging,
Draco muses, sounding quite fond despite his words. Harry laughed again, endlessly charmed.
Let me ask the publisher, baby. I can get it out of the house by afternoon.
Draco rolls his eyes, and Harry can be sure of that even though he can't see his husband's face.
Must you, Harry? You have a job to do. It's unbecoming.
Harry snorts. You have a job, he points out, which Draco weakly ignores.
Now Harry stares at the cover, and he can see the residue of Draco's magic on it. A silver thin string that's almost imperceptible to the naked eye.
Children? A partner, maybe? Harry says, tucking the book under his arm. Hornickel nods, though he's starting to look confused. Maybe his self-preservation instincts are finally kicking in.
Of course, yes. They're the reason I bought the shop.
Harry hums again. You know who I am. You can imagine that I have people I love. You know what I've done to people who've hurt them.
Hornickel looks properly frightened now.
Mr. Potter.
Incarcerous.
Harry only has a thinking, and Hornickel's extremities fly together, bound by the conjured cords.
Harry raises two fingers and rocks them to the left. The cords tighten even further.
Hornickel whirls in pain.
I'm not a cruel man, Harry says, standing just before Hornickel.
He's a reedy man, almost tall enough to meet Harry's eyes, a feat for most.
But you frightened my husband today, very badly. And what's worse, you touched him. I'm sure you understand, Harry says.
Please,
Hornickel tries. And Harry looks at the droplets of blood welling up around the tight grip of twine. Hornickel's arms are weakly oozing red.
Silencio. No one can hear you. No one will save you, Harry says.
Beedle the Bard held immobile between his arm and his side. Hornickel's crying softly now, in great muted gulps of air.
Desquamare, Harry curses,
watching as Hornickel's skin peels down his body in neat, even rows. That's when the real screaming begins. Draco is still asleep when Harry returns. Harry has cast a scourgify in his robes, and he washes his hands in the kitchen sink before waving a hand at himself. His clothes vanish, and his mind is quiet as he climbs into bed. Draco is turned away from him, his body still curled onto a sea. Harry's blood is humming, and he wants nothing more than to sink into Draco's warm hole, to reaffirm what he's known all along. There's no one but him. Nobody will look after his family better than him.
Draco makes a small sound, and then, went and did it anyway, yeah?
He whispers groggily. Harry tugs him close, fitting his chest against Draco's back. His dick slots neatly between Draco's cheeks, and he can't help but push forward languidly.
I did.
Draco had a panic attack the first time it happened. He'd been so terrified of them taking Harry away, taking Scorpius too. He'd been inconsolable. That might have been enough to curb Harry's urges, the uncontrollable need to know that the people he loved were protected. But Draco had sighed so softly when Harry told him what happened, his small body trembling in poorly disguised relief.
All the monsters are dead, Harry promised.
Draco stared at him, his eyes fathomless.
Are they?
You can't keep on like this, Draco murmurs, rocking his hips back.
Sure I can, Harry says,
pushing Draco's hair aside to expose the nape of his creamy neck.
I'll kill anyone who touches you, Draco. Anyone who touches Lenny. Anyone who touches Scorpius. You've got to know this. You know it.
The room is silent. Harry's cock hard and swollen, shoved between the cleft of Draco's ass.
Promise me,
Draco says, so quietly that Harry wouldn't be able to hear it, were he not listening for it.
Always.
The end. You've been listening to Death as an Old Friend, written by To Kill a Mockingbird and read by Reverie Pie. If you have enjoyed the story, please visit archiveofourown.org/works/37438303 to leave curious and comments for To Kill a Mockingbird. Many thanks to To Kill a Mockingbird for giving permission to share this podfic, and thank you for listening.